This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Aftershock Central Podcast. I'm Ronnie. Travis is here with me.
Yo, yo, yo. What's up, everybody?
And we have three books that we're going to dive into tonight, or today, or this morning, whenever you're listening. So you ready to just dive into them, Travis?
Well, do you have any thoughts before we start about Betrothed?
Oh, yeah, because that was announced.
Yeah, yesterday, right?
Something like that, yeah. It was fairly recent, let's put it that way.
Yeah, so it's out in March, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, did you read the caption on it?
Synopsis part of it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sounds pretty cool.
Yeah. Let's see, I'm trying to...
Well, it's like sci-fi fantasy, right? Like, I mean, you start out like teen romance and then drop in kind of a like transport to like a fantasy world, and they're like enemies.
Right. And they're on the eve of their 18th birthday, so they're not a full adult yet, or legally, I guess, but it's in the future, so. Or I would think it's in the future. That's by Sean Lewis writing, right? I believe so.
Let's go with that.
Okay. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Sean Lewis. Yeah, and the art from the preview pages look pretty good. So we'll kind of see how it goes. If it's like Total Recall sci-fi meets like teen drama style. Is that kind
of it's kind of like Romeo and Juliet or something, right? Okay, like, but yeah. They start out together, and then they realize that they, whatever, in another reality, like they're mortal enemies.
Yeah, and then
they're kind of like, one would assume they're trying to like settle it down, like with their armies and stuff, you know?
Right.
Or escape,
right? Yeah. Because it comes out in March, so and Juan Doe does the cover for cover B of the first issue, and it looks pretty fantastic.
Yeah, Juan's dope, dude.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add before we get going?
I'm good if you are, man.
Okay. The first book that we're gonna review tonight is Backways, which is written by Justin Jordan. So this is his Aftershock debut after a little bit of hiatus from Strayer. And it is drawn by Eleonora Carlini and Marshall Dillon on letters. Travis, would you like to do the little review for us?
Yeah, I didn't proofread it, but here we go. So Sylvia... is a teen with a magic obsession, gets pulled through a mirror and disappears. Her friend Anna looks for clues in Sylvia's room when a magic person shows up named Coyote Bones, steals Sylvia's journal, and disappears into the closet. Anna follows via magic and enters to the Backways, a collection of lost places. After stumbling into the lair of creepy Skin Horse, she escapes with Coyote Bones, who will now show her around and help her search for Sylvia.
That's a pretty good nutshell right there. So what did you think about this book?
Dude, I'm loving it, man. I'm very enticed by the world building, you know, that we're kind of getting hints of for the Backways. Uh-huh. Like I think that strikes me as, you know, immediate analogy is kind of like the Faraway meets the Dead Side. If right. you know, for anybody that reads like Valiant Comics, you know, so it's like a place that, or, you know, things that are lost. And also kind of just a haven for the magical and weird, you know. So I, you know, I'm liking that. I think in terms of being a book about magic, this is one of the more compelling, interesting ones right off the bat. You know, I kind of like the world that they're building there, and I got, you know, some theories about, you know, things, hints that they laid about the nature of the Backways. But, I mean, what do you think before we get into, like, super nitty-gritty stuff?
Oh, this book, it was on all cylinders for me, really. This was, it didn't read like a number one. It did, but it didn't. Because usually a number one just, like, sets up things, which this one did, obviously. But there was layers and introduction and interweaving of other things in there as well. And, dude, I'm like hook, line, and sinker on it. And the art goes with the story and with the tempo of the story. So it's like a perfect match for a number one.
Yeah, dude, the art is killer, man. And I agree with you. They dive, like, super into it. Like, I feel like we're already learning a lot of things, like, right from the get-go, you know?
Right.
For example, right? The nature of the Backways, you know, I feel like they've made reference repeatedly to a few different things.
Right.
And like they called them wanderers, mm-hmm. workers and weepers. Right.
Right.
And wanderers and weepers are then referred to kind of seems like it's a role of adding places to the Backways.
Right.
You know,
yeah.
They're like, once a place has been forgotten and shut off, then the wanderers and weepers get to it. And that's how we have a place like this. Right.
Right. Right.
So I, you know, I think that's interesting. And also, I feel like they're setting up obvious things as far as like symbols, you know, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. like. They make reference. Oh yeah, like for instance, yeah, like she uses a symbol to open up the portal. Mm-hmm. When Coyote Bones shows up in the apartment, it's two, I would assume, steal a book full of symbols. You know, like
yeah.
that thing that Anna's looking at.
Uh-huh.
That kind of seems to be one of the motivating things is like the search for signs. And Coyote Bones mentions it later when they're in the Backways. He's like, hey, if you want to go back where you came from, just like do that and don't search for the signs anymore, you know?
Right, right. Just
so I
pretty much forget whatever she knew type of thing.
Yeah.
Or not forget, okay, but like don't investigate it anymore.
Yeah, pretty much forget, yeah.
Which we knew from like Anna's responses to everything that's going on, that wasn't even an option on the table for her to do.
Yeah. Well, it begs the question though, like what's her backstory and what's Sylvia's backstory, you know, because it seems like they were getting into this stuff. So I'm curious how much she really knows that, you know, if they're just kind of like getting the vaguest hints before they crack it wide open, you know, like they're sucked in and now they're like diving deep like the rest of us.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, like, what, you know, that's, they must have like an aptitude for it, you know, like right. to be getting into it.
Yeah. Well, I guess I just assumed that Sylvia did, because like in the flashback panels, like Anna's dressed kind of like sporty. Like she had a tank top on and like sports shorts or whatever. But Sylvia was dressed, and then she had the medallion and, you know, kind of more gothic-ish, I guess. Like, you're starting to be gothic-ish.
All right.
But that makes sense, though, with Anna's response, as, like, you know, then, you know, she's looking and she sees all the crows, and it looks like she's pissy towards the crows. And then when she meets the crow lady, I guess, in the alleyway, she's just asking about where Sylvia is, not like what's going on or anything like that. It's where's my friend at?
Yeah, dude. So she doesn't even know. Like, she's an outsider.
Right.
Yeah. So it's like the crow lady, right? What do you make of that? Cause like her comments seem to be like, she's trying to keep something out of herself or out of her head, you know, like something that's scratching at the doors and, like she doesn't want to let it in. So I wonder what the significance of that is and whether that's applicable to any other stuff that's going on, like what's happening with Sylvia or.
Yeah, I took it like, you know, even like in the Marvel movies or in like, what is it? Bruce Almighty, where they had like the homeless person there, like spouting off things. And they actually knew what was going on, like the end was coming or, you know, aliens attacked or whatever the case may be. So I kind of thought that that was like one of those tropes where the crow lady was the crazy, quote unquote, crazy person that actually knew about the back way. And everybody else that would walk by would just see her as a crazy person. But now that Anna's on the hunt, you know, she understands that she's actually from there, or something's more to her than, you know, just being a crazy lady in the alley.
Yeah, I have to assume that it's pointing to something, you know, because it, you know.
Yeah.
It was, like, took up most of a page, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's like being economical, you gotta make stuff count.
You're right.
Yeah. Okay, so what did you think about Skin Horse?
He was, a little bit kind of creeped me out a little bit, but then, like, I don't know if it was because he was just how he was drawn to make it look creepy, but then, you know, even, like, when he made her smile and made her skin stretch or whatever, and his eyes glowed, but then he came back, and it was just like he was playful type thing. But coming across as somebody that's powerful, if that makes sense.
Well, I think clearly he is powerful because, you know, he's got the knack.
Right, right.
Which, like, not everybody has.
Right.
And he can, like, twist your flesh. But seems like he is imprisoned wherever he is, you know? He's, like, he's in his place and... as long as he stays there, he's fine. He's not breaking the rules.
Like the butler style?
Like, I don't know, you know, like, but he's talking about Cody Bones, and she's like, you're not allowed to be back wherever. He's like, hey, I'm where I am. that's kind of my reading on it. Yeah. But if that's the case, like, he's either, I would say, going to break the rules and leave that place for some reason, or they're going to be compelled to return to it again for some reason, like wherever the plot is going, you know, like if right, he should happen to show up again.
Yeah.
But go on.
Oh, I was just going to say, I guess he was like the butler / like gatekeeper because they hadn't even got to the back way yet, I guess, which would be like the backyard or the, like the transitional from that place or from the mansion. Because he's in the house, so we don't know if he can go inside or outside, but since he's trapped, is he trapped in that spot, in the house only, and he can't go outside?
I'll buy that, because he is kind of, like, designed like a butler. So,
yeah.
Why not?
Yeah.
But, oh, dude, like, just, like, as a side, all the character design in this, I think, is so awesome. Like, Coyote Bones.
Yeah.
Looks dope. It's like a Dia de los Muertos with, you know, with, like, horns and dreadlocks, you know?
Yeah.
There's, like, a Twi'lek, kind of.
Yeah.
It's a lot going on there.
And, like, I was going to even, like, the little... I don't even know what you call them, like Hellboy little kids, like demon kids, like on the very last page there, where they're playing in the street, and it looks like they're trying to stomp on scorpions. Do you see that?
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah,
even those, like, just little designs, and then you have the frog guy. Like, everybody here seems like they have such... depth to them, and we're just getting like a first glimpse at them.
Yeah, dude, by the way, the frog, are you looking at it?
Yeah,
is that the Hypnotoad?
It looks like it. It really looks like it.
That's what I thought when I saw that. I was like, oh, it's a Hypno frog.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. So, I have a question before we rate this up.
Yeah, let's do it, man.
Who's the more interesting character, Coyote Bones or Anna, at this point?
At this point, Coyote Bones, definitely, because Anna, I mean, she's kind of like a cipher, I think, you know? Like she's processing everything, but we haven't really seen all that much of who she is, you know, but
right.
Coyote Bones, like, we could talk about what her deal is, you know, like, I don't know. I think she's more interesting at this point, but okay. It's not her story, you know, like,
right. Yeah, she's a guide type thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Anna's going to be more like interesting, probably show more growth.
Okay.
As we go forward.
Okay.
You know, like, I kind of think it's obviously like there's some Matrix vibes as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Anna's Neo, I'm guessing.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and, you know, Coyote Bones is Morpheus.
Right. Right. I could see that. No.
What do you think?
Right now, to me, just from what we saw, like, Coyote Bones tipped her hand more and showed more of what, you know, like, she's still learning the magic, or not maybe the magic, but because she blamed it on the workers, but like, she isn't as powerful as Skin Guy was, for example, as to where I don't even know if Anna is processing it or not, because she has no... She doesn't have the normal reactions like everybody else would, right? Because
yeah,
you see Coyote Bones, and like, even she says, it is like, those aren't the normal questions that I get when people first see me. But you're just like skipping all over those, and Anna just keeps repeating like, "Where's my friend? I don't care about those questions. Where's my friends?" But I'll ask them if it gets me further in the conversation. And then, I guess she's Alice from Alice in Wonderland, because Coyote Bones even makes that reference of, like, we can go down this rabbit hole if you want to.
Yeah, I mean, that's a Matrix reference, too.
Yeah, right, yeah. So...
Yeah, no, for sure, yeah. So maybe Coyote Bones is, like, the white rabbit.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. So are you, I mean, does that mean that you're kind of intrigued, you know, like definitely there's a lot more we don't know about Anna, so
yeah,
you know.
And we basically don't know anything about Sylvia just from Anna's and her mom's point of view. That's it.
Oh, gee, well, since you mentioned it, I did enjoy, like, the kind of thematic element that they put in there where, like, the mother thinks she's going crazy, right? Like, she thinks she has, like, a kid who's in and out of, like, facilities or whatever. Right. And, like, if you had a, you know, like, your child would, like, thought that magic and, like, demons or whatever were real, like, you might think that they were crazy and struggle with that. And I like that was in here, you know, like she thinks that Anna was a bad influence because like it kind of brought that out in Sylvia. So I actually felt that had, you know, like a deeper emotional resonance, you know, like people I'm sure can identify with like having kids or family members with, you know,
Alzheimer's,
mental or emotional problems, you know. So yeah,
definitely, and it was, and just like you said, is like she's blaming Anna because I think that's the excuse because she doesn't want to admit that she thinks her daughter's crazy, even though we as the reader know she's not crazy. But you know what I'm saying? Because like there's a couple of text in there, like I had to take her out of this because. Whatever. So it was something else's fault is the reason why, you know, Sylvia had to move or this or that. And then now it's Anna that's the issue. Not really Sylvia or her as the mother. But so I thought that was, like you said, like a element to it also.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice when you can kind of make it a little bit real like that, you know?
Right,
like,
yeah.
That's not what the story is about, but it definitely makes it resonate more.
Right. All right. Rate this one up, brother.
I'm going 5 out of 5, man. I'm sucked in, as you said. We already got tons of details and, like, you know, a little idea of where it's going, so... and the art is great, so I'm on board.
Yep, I'm right there with you. 5 and 5, and it's the first issue, and it feels like we're already on issue 3 that we got so much information. And it was great paced information and complex details on different characters that we saw. And so, yeah, I'm right there with you. Art's awesome. Art fits it. 5 out of 5. And then the next book that we'll go into will be the first of 2 books by Colin Bunn. This is Dark Arc number 4 with Wando doing art and David Sharp on letters. You want to do this nutshell too?
We're doing Dark Arc, yeah?
Yeah.
I can do the nutshell, and you just tell me if I left anything out.
Okay.
All right, so I would say the vampires attack the ship and incite a monster riot. Ultimately, the uprising is defeated when Cruel betrays Nex, and they then lock him up on an anchor under the ship. However, during the attack, Shrey's wife is bitten by a vampire. So that's my nutshell.
Yeah. I guess I was just confused if it was Shrey's wife that was bitten because she's pregnant, or if it was one of his son's wives. But I guess if it's just him and his family, then it has to be his wife, right?
No, that's a point, actually. I think there's more than 2 generations, you know?
Okay.
So it could be, you know, Shrey's daughter-in-law.
Right. That's the only thing that I was actually, like, the only part that I was kind of confused on was who actually is she? Is she the mother that's pregnant also? But, because it's Sela, right?
Yes.
And, well, because see, the guy, yeah, it's got to be like, it's. I don't think it's his wife, because the guy, which I can't think of his name, or I can't find it right now, but because she just calls him husband, but he's like, has anyone seen my wife? And I don't think it's him, because he runs down there, right? Or is that? Yeah, it's not him, because he's with Shire's.
Yeah,
with,
no, you're
with you're Kroll right. That's and a, X.
Yeah,
at that plus, point.
He's got more of a goatee, whereas Shrey's got like the Moses beard or whatever.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Good point. Okay. So let me ask you this. All right. Lady with a baby bitten by a vampire. Are we looking at like a half vampire type scenario? Like if this baby gets born, a la Blade or the Bourne?
It would pretty much have to be, right? I mean,
if they want to.
If they survive it, I would say so, yeah. Are you thinking that way too, or are you thinking the opposite way?
Well, they're going to do something with it, but I'm not sure how long the story is going to be, if like how much space they can give that to the story, you know, like,
right. Yeah.
Like, are the vampires going to be, continue to be like a big part of the story, or is it going other places?
Well, I think it's going other places now that Nex is pretty much put in its place, kind of, because he's pretty much the leader. And so, and we saw like the sea creature there that tied him up. We've tended to the traitor. So I still think that he regained the control of the Ark by doing so, by standing up and putting Nex in his place. So I think going forward, I think it'll be more about Kroll than, and what his whole issue is, than actual vampire part of it.
All right, well, I mean, good segue, man. So, A, like, I don't really remember that they specified what deal or bargain Kroll had made with Nex, but they, like, he says, you're my lieutenant, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not sure they really, like, specified what that arrangement was. And also, I'm like very interested by his relationship with
Janice,
the girl. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, because
we think about that stuff.
Yeah, because it's almost like a cat and mouse type thing with her. Like she's his toy type thing, because he's like, I'm your protector and I bring you food and I don't even get a thank you, or I save you and I don't even get a thank you. But he says it kind of like as a matter of factly or harshly about it. And she's just like, thank you. Like she's blown away by it because, but since issue one, he's always favored her over the rest of the humans that are slaved under the Ark.
For sure. Yeah, it definitely could be, it seems to be more about her than about others. And I think they kind of reference that, you know, like they're all talking to her, like get him to like bust us free, you know?
Right.
So that's strange, you know?
And even when, he asked her if Shire asked Janice if she's okay, she said yes, we're just meat or a piece of meat or whatever. Like she's not trying to uphill a mutiny or anything with the slave humans. So like she knows more than what she's leading on, but she's not tipping her cards yet, type of thing.
oh man, like there's something secret going on between her and Cruel.
Yeah, yeah. That's what it.
Yeah,
that's
I mean, what
it seems like to me, but she's not making it quite so obvious.
Yeah. Well, do you notice that like they make reference multiple times in every issue, pretty much, as to like secret plans for like the new world that awaits. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Like everybody seems to be like, well, so what's your plan when we get off the ship? You know, like, everybody seems like, they're going to use that opportunity to just be like, and now like, I'm going to get mine. So what's Cruel's plan? What's Shrey's plan? You know, like right. What's Nexus' plan?
Right. Yeah, that.
Yeah,
because Nex even made that reference. Is like you care. You don't care about. You say, what I don't even remember the actual quote that he said, but he referenced his wife and baby, right? And you don't even care about them, or you don't even care about the human slave, something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. So. Curl definitely has a bigger plan than what he's leading on as well.
Yeah. Dude, so I'm kind of another thing that I'm interested in is just in like a broad scope for this story, you know, is like looking at Shrey, right?
Yeah.
Like he is like damned, you know, like he's not going to ever be redeemed, but his whole family is pure,
right,
you know?
Right.
Like, that's why they're vulnerable. That's why he made the deal to have the Ark. He's like, I am doing this so that my family, who's done nothing wrong, like, they're going to make it through and live to see the new world, right?
Right.
But that's at the price of, you know, working for the devil and bringing all of the monsters of the old world to the new, you know, and right. Assuming at least some of them are not going to be nice to humans.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So like, is that worth the price? You know, like he's to bring these horrors to the new world just to save his own family.
I think that's the type of person that he is, though. He's the honorable, because we still don't know what he did to be damned, right?
Well, I think that's just how he got his powers, you know.
Okay.
I would assume.
And like up until this issue, he's kind of been like that monk, lame, like just rule because I said so type thing. Like we didn't know. He hadn't displayed any kind of power or anything that the monsters or creatures or whatever should follow him until like this issue, right? Or am I wrong on that?
I feel like he flares up a little bit every once in a while. He burn some fire from his hands or something. He's like, guys, I do have powers. Like, don't make me use them.
Yeah, like he flexes on them every once in a while and like flares up, like he said. Yeah, but
yeah,
for the most part, he just seems like quiet and peaceful.
Yeah. Well, okay. Here's the question, though. Like, what exactly is the deal? Like, how does he have to get every species across, you know? Like, how many of these monsters have to make it to the new world alive for him to get credit for his family to be all right?
Right, yeah, good point.
If they all die except for his family and they just show up on an empty Ark, like, are they going to be cool? Like, because otherwise, he's can't really use his powers to go after them, keep them under control. He's just got to be like, you know, like, we're on this together, you idiots.
Right, yeah. Yeah, I would say that he has to at least take two a male and a female so they can procreate, or, you know, so they can reproduce, I would think, which makes me, I mean, none of them are really quote-unquote real anyway, so I can't see, like, the unicorns making it off the ark or out of this story. Maybe it's a thing where this is the Titanic and not an ark at all, and nobody makes it out of this story.
Yeah, I mean, I bet that maybe it might head towards that. Like, there's a choice that has to be made, like, at some point, you know, like, do you save the ark or do you let it sink?
Right, right. Well, and now it's really going to hit the fan because the angels are there. So why would the angels be there?
Well, dude, like, this, they're not supposed to be having this ark, you know? Like, that's kind of defying, like, the wishes of God, I would assume. So they're just there to, like, clean it up, I would assume.
Right. They're the men on a mission. No pun intended.
I got it.
I mean, wouldn't you say, right? Or are they going to be there? And because honestly, like, besides the bright light, but the art in here, it doesn't make it look like angelic angels. So are they good angels or are they bad angels?
Well, you know, this wouldn't be the first time that you kind of take the angels and flip them so that they're like the antagonist, you know, like Spawn being an obvious precursor. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, like, I don't know how deep they're going to go into that as for the motivations for their boss, like, inciting the flood, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's not necessarily a good, not evil thing to do, you know? Like, meanwhile, the devil is just, like, trying to save the species that were left behind, arguably.
Right.
So, I mean, the whole thing is flipped. Yeah. So, like, obviously the angels are going to be the bad guys here. God's going to be the bad guy. But, right. Yeah, like, are they going to get into any of that about, like, why for the flood in the first place, right. You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I don't know if this is ending at 6, because if it's ending at 6, it seems like there's a lot of a lot of stuff that we're going to have to get jammed into 2 issues.
Oh, yeah, hell yeah, dude. I didn't realize it was almost over.
Well, I don't know if it is or not. I hope it's not. But, you know, like, the next book we're going to talk about ends at 6. So, is it ending to take a break before it comes back? Or is it not ending at 6? I don't know. We'll have to, we might tweet Colin and ask him to see. Because I haven't heard one way or another if it's a mini or if it's an ongoing.
Yeah, I'd like for it to keep going, you know, like, there's definitely a lot here, a lot of stuff to be answered, so.
Yeah, and the pacing's good, I think, even though it's on an arc, so you're only on one location, I think the story progresses nicely.
Are you saying it's a one-arc story?
It could be, yeah. So you want to rate this one up? We'll go on to the next Colin Bunn book.
Yeah, man. I'm going to go 4.25 out of 5 on this one.
All right. I'm going to go with a solid 4 on this one. And I think just because I was confused about at first who the lady that was pregnant that got bit by the vampires were through the first read.
Yeah.
All right. And the second Colin Bunn book that we have with Marco Kolak is Unholy Grail, number 5. And this is the last issue of this series. And you want to go 3 for 3 with a review on this one, too?
Yeah, I will go 3 for 3. Let's do it. All right. Okay. So, Arthur fathers a son with Morgana Le Fay. This breaks his oath to the Lady of the Lake, and the kingdom falls to ruin. Merlin introduces the idea to find the Holy Grail and sends Arthur away with his bastard Mordred ruling in his place. Mordred leads an insurrection against Arthur upon his return, and they are both killed. Meanwhile, Guinevere and Lancelot kill Merlin before his plan is realized.
Excellent. This is one of your favorite books, right? Is it up there?
I'm still not sure. You know, I enjoy it, but this isn't necessarily like my top favorites.
Okay.
And I'm gonna be honest, like mea culpa, I just realized that I missed issue 4 of this. So.
Oh really?
So if there's questions that I have about what happens that were answered in issue 4, like you can definitely like let me know. Yes. Okay. That's my bad, but I like it, you know. I do have to say, just as kind of an aside, like I feel like there's kind of a similarity in sensibility between this and Dark Ark, which is kind of just like, hey, it's the evil version of King Arthur, you know? Right. Like yeah. it's the dark version of Noah and the Ark, you know?
Right.
But I mean, I'm definitely like very interested by the idea of it.
Yeah.
Like an evil demonic, Merlin who, and now is like pulling all the strings.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm just curious about, you know, how directly every single event in this series is like just his influence, and like he is causing everything to unfold exactly as it plays.
Right.
And if that's the case, like, do they really elaborate what his final goal is?
No, not really. I wouldn't think so, unless it's just to find people and use them as puppets. Because when he first got there, Camelot wasn't even built yet. Because Arthur builds Camelot, so it's not to destroy Camelot because it hasn't even been built yet. You know, and we don't know anything prior Merlin of why, like, it's not vengeful or revenge or anything.
Yeah, dude, I almost think, like, there's really not necessarily an indication that, like, the original Merlin was anything to anybody, like, of note, you know? Because right. This all starts, like, right when Arthur is a baby. Like, you know, none of the events have been put into motion to make him king. And, like, I don't know. I'm just, like, I'm trying to follow his plan because it always seemed to me like he was like, I'm going to do this thing, and I'm doing it for a reason, right? Like, in this issue, he says, you know, like, he comes up with the idea to send people out looking for the Grail, right?
Right.
And that could be a distraction. That could just be to, like, to get Arthur out so he can set up Mordred to steal the throne.
Right.
Like, I'm not sure necessarily what that accomplishes per se. But he also kind of refers in passing to the Grail as basically lore to his prey. Which implies that, like, that the Holy Grail is bait for something that Merlin is hunting.
Right.
You know? And that could play into, I believe it's issue 1. Percival comes back with the Grail to the Siege Perilous and sits down, and then he gets, like, eaten by magic and like Merlin is walking away or something.
Right.
Right.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, I don't know. I'm latching on to that as being something because like, I want all of this to have a point.
Right.
Well, you know, like does Merlin succeed, you know, or does he get killed before he does what he's trying to do?
Right.
Or both.
Yeah. And see, I don't know if it has a bigger point than the story of King Arthur that we know isn't the truth, and here is the real story to it, type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it, like as simple as that, right? Not like what's Merlin's motivation to do stuff, or, you know, actually this is how Excalibur came to be, or the Lady of the Lake, that type of stuff. It's, we know about the mythology, but this is the actual true story of it. So I don't know. I guess I always took it as that's what this whole story was about, was just the stuff that wasn't ever told.
Yeah. No, I'm down with that.
But I'm with you. That it... Like, it kind of doesn't make sense if Merlin doesn't have an end goal. Right? Or if his goal was reached or not.
Or, yeah, if it's unclear whether it is, maybe that was the intent, but, I was thinking, you know, Merlin is just kind of like flying by the seat of his pants, and he's, you know, doing what he thinks will play to his advantage in any given situation, or he's like trying to sow chaos, you know, by doing all this stuff. I just think it's weird that he would like put so much effort into building up Arthur and Camelot only to tear it down.
Right. Right.
I mean, unless that was just like a ploy to get some people hunting for the Holy Grail for some reason.
Okay. Yeah. I can see that. Definitely. And honestly, this issue is a lot better to me than like previous issues. I don't know if it's because stuff's happening faster or at a better pace. But, like, before, it just seemed like there was so much stuff that was glossed over that we didn't get resolution on.
Yeah, I mean, do you think, like, I was going to say that as an ending, like, it maybe feels a little bit rushed. Like, so maybe things that they, like, introduced didn't necessarily get a chance to be, like, realized.
Yeah, flushed out. And I hate to say it because I really do like this book, but that's what the whole five issues together seem like to me. Like with issue one, we had so much stuff happening all at once that we like glossed over details. So there wasn't time for it to breathe on its own. And then like issue two, we hit the ground running, you know, and issue three, same thing, like Knights of the Round Table and the Lancelot and the Guinevere stuff. And then four, you know, Guinevere spews out Morgan Lefray, and then her and Lancelot have their affair, and Arthur and Morgan have their affair type stuff. So it's like, they're like, you don't want it to dwell on one subject for too long, but it just seemed like some of the interesting detail parts of it got glossed over to set the pacing. So we got to issue five and to the end, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's possible that it relies a lot on like existing knowledge of like the Camelot story.
Yeah.
That they're like, okay, you guys all know Camelot, so like, we can maybe, you know, like, assume knowledge of the way you think things play out and then fill in things where Merlin is like, you should say this to this guy. And, you know, like pulling the strings behind the scenes. Yeah, but it's definitely a lot to try to fit into the space that it had.
Right. And like you said, like, you had the dark version of King Arthur lore, and then you have the opposite of, you know, the Noah's Ark. But I think this one falls short for me, as, like, I'm enjoying Dark Ark a lot more than what I enjoyed this series. Does that make sense?
Sure.
I'm going to go ahead and rate it up, unless you got more stuff that you want to talk about it.
Well, I think I just, like, answering to, like, you know, your last point, you know, it's possible that this one was trying to do more than Dark Ark, but maybe it, you know, like, it got shortened or was kept short intentionally, you know. And so, it, like, you know, trying to do more and, you know, not getting to it all, like is, you know.
Yeah.
That's a less satisfying situation than telling a smaller story and having longer to do it.
Right, right. Yeah, like this one, like you said, I think a lot of stuff was like fill in the blanks type stuff, as to where you already knew or assumed to know the Arthur lore. So, well, we're not going to retell that part of it, but we're going to hit on this note as to where maybe that part would have been interesting to go into. Or why was Arthur so into listening to Merlin, besides just, you know, being his whatever, his healer or whatever. Why was he trusting him so much to go out and kill all the kings for the swords and throw them in the lake? You know, that deeper connection there.
Yeah, well, you know, stuff was going really good for a while.
Yeah,
you know, right. Like, it's easy to keep trusting your advisors when nobody can touch you and you just keep getting more powerful.
Well, yeah,
that's true.
Good point.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know if right up to the end he really realizes how much Merlin was using him and betraying him compared to, you know, Lancelot and Guinevere.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good point. All right, I'm going to rate it up.
All right, man, what do you say?
I'm going to give this issue a 3.75. I'm going to give the whole series a solid 3.5, though, because it was middle of the road. I love King Arthur stuff, so it's always nice to read, like, a different tale on it, like an Elseworlds type story. But there was peaks and valleys through issue 1 through 5 for me. Some of it seemed to drag a little bit. Some of it seemed to rush and gloss over stuff, and then, like, this issue, I think, was hitting on everything, and, like, right when it gets its momentum, now we're done.
Yeah, I feel you, man. I thought this, you know, I thought it was pretty solid issue, but I was also, you know, obviously left with questions about, you know, what everything meant exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, I definitely admit it seems like maybe I missed an issue and some of that might've been in there. But yeah, I think I'd maybe go like 4 out of 5 for the issue and like 3.75, for the series as a whole.
Okay. Sounds good.
Like, it's interesting and pretty well done, but, you know, I can't help but feel like maybe there should have been more, and it just had to get cut short.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, that'll wrap us up for tonight. So, not sure, we probably won't have another episode before the holidays, so I hope everybody has safe travels and good holidays. Stay tuned after our outro, because today got announced that Aftershock will have its first ever Free Comic Book Day, and it'll be Relay Number 0, which is also a first for Aftershock Books, having a zero issue. And so Zach and I talk about that, and he explains and goes into a little detail more about that issue. And you can find me at Rombar316. Travis, you're...
I'm at The Great Magnet.
And we are collectively at Aftershock Central Pod. And I hope everybody has happy holidays.
Okay, so I'll tell you something. I don't know whether or not this is going to get announced tomorrow. I think it's going to get announced tomorrow. Okay. So if it does, then feel free to run it. If it doesn't, then I just need you to take this out of the podcast.
Okay.
So after they read the first script, Aftershock was really in love with what I was doing with Relay, so they asked me to write a Free Comic Book Day issue. So this year will be Aftershock's first Free Comic Book Day issue ever, and it's going to be a prequel to Relay.
Awesome.
Yeah, so we're going to have Relay Number 0 coming out on Free Comic Book Day, and it's going to be a gold-tier issue, so there's going to be, I think, like 260,000 of them printed. So it should be a pretty big debut, and like, the really neat thing is, like, we're going back, like, 400 years before the story takes place and showing exactly how the Relay was sold to the first planet. Not built, but sold. Like, almost like a traveling salesman comes and says, hey, I've got this thing that's going to change the way that you live your life.
Nice.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like Aftershock Genesis, then, which wasn't a Free Comic Book Day, but it had, like, little one-off stories that tied into the other stories at that time.
This Free Comic Book Day issue is going to be like the... So I had written a bunch of history for what I imagined this world would be like, and, you know, where things led up until the first issue. And so this is actually the story of how we get to the world that we see in the first issue.
Okay.
And for people who read the Zero issue, they're going to have a lot of insider information going into the series that people won't.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's filled with Easter eggs and all kinds of little nods, and I think it's going to be a ton of fun. Like, I look at it as like a pretty necessary part of the story, but you can not read Zero and still read Number 1 and enjoy it all the same.
Right. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, man. I was completely floored. I was like, okay, like, this whole year for me has kind of been The Dregs was so well received, and there's been so many opportunities that have been coming out of it, that I kind of just am like, all right, I think I'm in a coma, but I gotta...